Last week, Mark preached a great sermon on giving, and it was our Hope Day of Giving. And just Australia-wide, we collected, I think, around $13,000, and Melbourne contributed to around $5,000 of that. So that's a great job. Awesome. Great work. I think, you know, I've had the honour of being up to the Highlands, and I think we just don't understand. We take for granted what we have here and the ease in which we buy things. And the ease at times how we earn money. And to the point where, you know, if we don't have a job, the government gives us money and all that sort of stuff. And baby bonuses. I don't know what happens to the baby bonus anymore. But you go to the Highlands and it's amazing to me how people literally live off the land. They're on the side of the road, you know, selling peanuts. Literally peanuts, okay? Not just peanuts. And it's amazing. And you just, I think we just take for granted our situation. And you know, it's on my heart to make sure that we never do that. Me personally, I don't want to ever take for granted my situation. I'm not here because anything special about me. I don't deserve it any more than anybody else. I don't even know how all that works. But I'm grateful. And I want to stay grateful and be grateful. And I appreciated Mark sharing about, I don't remember the exact point, but he's talking about the stench of wealth or something, or the smell that wealth gives off. And that doesn't mean that wealth is bad, because it can give off a very good smell. But unfortunately, we live in a world where it doesn't. You know, wealthy people tend to be proud and snobby and self-righteous. And we know that. That's not even making a very harsh judgment. But you know, I was thinking about it, and, you know, I told Mark this. I said, you know, it really struck me, because generosity is the weight loss program for wealthy people. If you don't want to deal with wealth, and even the world understands this. Philanthropy, you go to a course at university, and you know that it teaches you to be the most successful people are the most generous people when it comes to that. They'll teach you that the way to deal with wealth is you've got to give it away. Yeah. You've got to be generous. And it's what stops the greed setting in. And if you don't, if you're not generous, then you're going to get unhealthy when it comes to wealth. Will make you unhealthy. So, but I appreciate what Mark shared for sure. And I think with all our contributions, we generally do a great job. Let's continue to be that way. Our missions contribution, our regular contribution, you know, the majority of it goes to staff. I want to preach this a little while ago, but I just want everyone to know that our next couple, the next people we want to have for staff, we need to hire a teen couple. You know, we're getting to the point now, we have like, I don't know, next year's going to be like 40 teens and 20-odd pre-teens or something, that's 60. You know, that's hard. I mean, these guys, I appreciate what Nathan and Claudine do, what Aaron and Esther do, what the Sarachooks do, we have Fionn and Nick in there as well. We really appreciate what they do. And it's just, they're just volunteers. And these people work full-time jobs. I know they work incredibly hard. And then to think about basically giving up their weekends. It's huge. It's huge. And you know, we realise that need and we don't want to keep calling. So we realise the next step will be a teen couple. And so keep that in your mind. But when you think about your giving, remember, that's what it goes to. And so we just need to keep taking this higher and higher and higher, you know. We've got to just keep, because remember, that's what it's all about. We're not going to buy a building. Will we ever buy a building? We're not into buildings. I mean, if we convert a billionaire and he wants to throw a few million at us so we can buy a building, maybe. But generally, you know, we're not going to invest in that. That's not the future. It would cost, I don't know, we'd have to be probably Bacchus Marsh or something. I don't know. We're find some plot of ground out there. I know the West people would love us. I know the Manalusas would love us at Bacchus Marsh for sure. It's on their doorstep. Say again? Good idea. Yeah, anyway. Anyway, that's just some pre-sermon thoughts. So go to 2 Corinthians chapter 10, because that's our text today. 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Let's read a little bit of this together. And Paul writes, he says, "By the meekness and gentleness of Christ, I appeal to you. I, Paul, who am timid when face to face with you, but bold when I am away, I beg you that when I come I may not have to be as bold as I expect to be towards some people who think that we live by the standards of this world. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. And we will be ready to punish every act of disobedience once your obedience is complete. You are looking only on the surface of things. If anyone is confident that he belongs to Christ, he should consider again that we belong to Christ just as much as he. For even if I boast somewhat freely about the authority the Lord gave us for building you up rather than pulling you down, I will not be ashamed of it. I do not want to seem to be trying to frighten you with my letters. For some say his letters are weighty and forceful, but in person he is unimpressive and his speaking amounts to nothing. Such people should realize that we are what we are in our letters. When we are absent, we will be in our actions when we are present. We do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves. They are not wise. We, however, will not boast beyond proper limits, but we'll confine our boasting to the field God has assigned to us, a field that reaches even to you. We are not going too far in our boasting, as would be the case if we had to come to you, for we did not get as far as you with the gospel of Christ. Neither do we go beyond our limits by boasting of work done by others. Our hope is that as your faith continues to grow, our area of activity among you will greatly expand, so that we can preach the gospel in the regions beyond you. For we do not want you to boast about work already done in another man's ministry, but let him who boasts boast in the Lord. For it is not the one who commends himself who is approved, but the one whom the Lord commends. You know, it's a great text, and you know, in this text there's a verse that I love and I often use a lot. In 2 Corinthians 10:5, you know, we take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ. I don't know how often you have used that verse, but it's one of my favourite verses in the Bible, like so many. You know, what's going on here? Well, you know, when you read 2 Corinthians 10 and 11 together, we probably should read 11 together, but time permitting, that really what's going on, well, this is a case where, again, he's having to defend his ministry. You know, what's going on? Well, and if you read to 2 Corinthians 11, he'll talk about those super apostles. If you look at 11:5, for instance, he says, "But I do not think I'm at least inferior to those super apostles. I may not be a trained speaker, but I do have knowledge. We have made this perfectly clear to you." You know, Paul was coming under criticism about his ministry. Matter of fact, they say, you know, well, you know, he's one thing. You know, when he comes, you know, in his letters, he's one way. He seems really forceful. You know, in his letters, the way he speaks. But when he comes face to face, he's not that way. You know, what's going on? So when he starts off this, you could probably argue he may be a little bit what? Facetious, you know, maybe a little bit of sarcasm. Then he says, "Hey, you know, by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, I appeal to you, I, Paul, who am timid when face to face with you, but bold when I'm away. I beg you to." And he goes on. And this seems to be the thought of what's going on. There were some people there that were giving Paul a hard time. How many people? Who knows how many people? If it was anything like the situation in churches, the way it tends to go, and you've probably heard me say this before, that, you know, there's a stat that says ministers leave because of how many? 3 or 4 people. And that's true. Ministers will leave their positions. They could be in a church of hundreds like this. And if he just hears the noises of those 3 or 4 squeaky wheels, if you like, those people who complain, all you begin to think about is the people that complain. You don't. That's the way we are, right? In our minds, we get that way. We always tend to hear the negative. Well, there could be 100 people saying 100 positive things. You go, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, thanks, bro." But one person says something negative, and what do you go away and think about? You will. If all of you come up to this sermon and you said, "Man, that was awesome, bro. Best sermon I ever heard." Don't say that, obviously. But if one person comes and says, "Listen, I want to take issue with what you spoke about. blah, 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 rattle all off. What am I going to go home and think about? I'll guarantee you, I don't know what I'm going to think about. I'm going to be that person who's unhappy. That's the one that's going to affect me. And chances are, that's probably, maybe what was going on here. Was it the whole church? I doubt it. But just enough to stir the pot. Just enough to get this going. And that sets sort of the scene, you know, of what's going on here. You know, because he says, when I'm away, I beg you that when I come, I may not have to be as bold as I expect. He said, but towards some people who think that we live by the standards of this world. He says, for though we live in the world, we do not wage as the world does. And what's that all about? Well, it seems to me, I think what's going on here, personally, is the whole idea that they misunderstood Paul. So I think Paul was gentle. I think he was meek. I think he was understanding. But they took advantage of that and began to criticise him for that. They criticised the fact that he was patient. They criticised the fact that he led his ministry that way. Thinking that he was what? Weak. Lack conviction. You know, why aren't you laying it out? And so when he goes on, he says, for we do not wage. So you've got to take this, you've got to take the next step. You've got to think about this and think, well, what's he saying? What's the next step? Because then he says, well, we do not wage. We don't use the weapons that the world uses. We don't wage war like the world does. So if he's thinking this way, what's he probably thinking? He's thinking that. Some people are thinking, you know, why doesn't he do what? Why doesn't he just lay it out? Why doesn't he just be forceful? Why do you just, you know, kick him out of the church? Because, you know, sometimes that's the easiest thing to do. Believe it or not, it's easy just to lay down the law. Let me not try and understand. Let me just get in line. That's the easiest thing to do, right? We're easy to church. Just do what I say or get out. Get faith today or get out the way. Right. Stop taking up the pews here. Stop wasting my time. I'm tired of listening. It gets that way. Now, it makes me wonder where that's what Paul was thinking. That's what they were thinking, sorry. Why isn't he like this? And Paul's saying, we don't wage war the way the world does. That's the way the world wages war. Intolerant. Unforgiving. Lack of grace. Let me sit down and work. Let me try and hear what you're saying. I mean, the one thing, I mean, Mervyn shared his thoughts about Jesus. You know, and the one thing I love about Jesus was the fact he had a measured response. It's easy to think Jesus was this guy just, you know, calling down. Let me tell you now, it was measured. God has a measured response. Because if God didn't have a measured response, where would we be? Seriously, if God wasn't measured in his response, where would we be right now? What do we deserve? Come on, man, fold it all up. Poof, toss it out. That's what it is. Paul is just having a measured response and he's being criticised for that. I understand this as a leader. I can identify with this. People expect you to, and I've had people, you know, why do you boy, just kick them out? It's easy to be harsh. It's easy just to lay it out. That's what the world does. You don't pull your line. I don't care about your situation. I don't care what you're going through generally. I don't have time to sit out and talk and sort out your problems. Move on. I'll get someone else to do the job. That's the way the world wages war. Yeah. That's the way the world deals with its kind. Paul saying, that's not me. And they misunderstood him. They misunderstood him. And he goes on, you know, he says, you know, he'll go on, he'll say, oh, I am coming up with a point and I'm coming up with a sermon title, by the way. Just in case you're wondering. You know, he says, for those, some accuse him, so I'm just finding my spot here. He says, I expect to be towards some people who think that we live by the standards of this world. Or that the word there, the old King James translates it as carnal knowledge, you know, the flesh, if you like. It says, you know, we want to deal with things the way the flesh does, the way the world does. And Paul says, even though we're in the world, No, we don't wage war this way. And then he'll come up with that great verse in 2 Corinthians 10:5. He says, "For we take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ." I think Paul, and what Paul's intimating there is, he's saying that I understand where this is coming from, and it would be very easy for me to go down this path. It's so easy to think the way the flesh thinks. But he says we take captive those thoughts and we make them obedient to Christ. And so the title of my sermon today, and I've only got one point, the title of my sermon today is, it's a head game.
Come on.
It's a head game. And my first point, and one and only point, is thoughts for Christ. Thoughts for Christ. You know, they'll often say in the sporting world, and you've probably heard this, but it's 90% head and 10% ability. That's what they say. It's a head game. You know, and normally they'll talk about this with golfers. You know, it's all in the mind. It's all about that. And I don't know whether that's true or not. You know, I don't understand. I do understand how it works a little bit, because confidence, pardon me, is a big deal. You know, they often say you are what you eat. Well, I think it's probably fair to say you are what you think. You know, you are what you think. You know, I put up some interesting thoughts just typed in thoughts, and you know, I already knew this, but you know, men get picked on with this sort of stuff, so we'll throw them under the bus. But you know, men, when it comes to sex thoughts, there was this research that was done, that men have like 8,000 thoughts about sex per day, or something like that, something ridiculous. Now, I just want to say that's unfounded research, apparently, and it's probably good to know that it's unfounded, because it's pretty alarming, and that's not what it is. But people have done those sorts of thoughts. You know, some have done those sorts of research as to what do people think about at the end of the day. And you know, the question is, you know, what do you think about during the day?
Yeah.
You know, what is your mind filled with? You know, the weapons of the world. You know, the weapons of the world: revenge, slander, pride, unforgiveness, malice, deceit, bitterness. That's the weapons of the world. What are the weapons that Paul talks about? Well, he's going to talk about the weapons of, you know, that we talk about, are weapons of truth. He says we have these weapons that demolish the strongholds and sets up every pretension against the knowledge of God. What demolishes the world's strongholds? Truth does. What demolishes the world's stronghold? Love does. That unconditional love. You know, that righteousness, that humility, their strongholds. Paul was humble, Paul was gentle, and they saw that as a sign of weakness. They didn't realise he could have come in and just laid it all out. He had no issue doing this. This is the same guy who went from synagogue to synagogue. Paul was not weak. This is the same guy that will stand in front of Agrippa. This is the same guy that will go to Caesar. This is not a weak man. They just expected something different. You know, what are our thoughts? You know, I find 2 Corinthians chapter 10 verse 5 a very challenging verse. You know, thoughts for Christ. It's something to talk about, it's something to think about. Philippians 4:4, you know, words, the way we think obviously is very important. Look at Philippians chapter 4 for a second. You know, beginning in Philippians chapter 4, beginning in verse 4. You know, Paul says, "Rejoice the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all, the Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you." So much about thinking there. It's a great verse. You know, don't be anxious about anything. How many times have I remembered that verse to give me that peace of mind? Present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding. You know, we have to understand that a lot of what we do, a lot of what we are and who we are comes up here. It's all about what we think.
Yeah.
It's all about, because we're all bombarded by these fleshly thoughts. That's what Paul, we're not living the way the world does. We understand how you can, but he says we take captive. Because that whole 2 Corinthians 10:11 is all about defending who he is. In chapter 11, he'll go on and talk about these super apostles and are they so inferior to them? And then he'll talk about his credentials of apostleship. He'll talk about what he went through, those great verses in 2 Corinthians 11. It's all about that. But for our point today, I really want to focus on this whole idea of what's going on up here.
Yeah.
Are we waging? Because the battle's there.
Yeah. All right.
We've got a battle to fight, and it ends and starts right here, and how you view things. You know, in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, it says, "Faith is being sure of what we faith is being sure of what we hope for, and certain of what we do not see." Even your faith is ultimately a mental decision.
That's right.
Yep.
That you decide to believe. You say, okay, I accept this. I believe this. You want to look for some feeling? No. The feelings will come and go.
Right.
And what are feelings and emotions anyway? Controlled and moved by thoughts. I'm telling you now, before you feel something, you had a thought. I'll guarantee you, emotions is purely that. It's thinking personified into emotion. If you're feeling negative, you might feel depressed. We might get into that. If you're feeling fearful, you'll get anxious. I mean, it's just the way it is. And that's why we have to understand this whole challenge, thoughts for Christ. I know I've taught a number of times, I haven't just taught this for a while, but I remember thinking once that for me, you know, if you imagine that your mind is a house. Your mind is a house. And your thoughts are door-to-door salesmen. And I don't know how many people you have come knocking on your door. And sometimes when I see them coming through the front, I'll go, "Karen, someone's coming." And you have all sorts of people these days. Even real estate agents will come knocking on, no more leaving anything. They knock on your door. "Do you want to sell your house?" I've had it. I'm ready for the next one. I'm going to say, "Yeah, okay, here's the deal. If you get me, I won't disclose the figure, but if you get me this figure, and you sell for that, it's fine. But if you can't get this figure, then you cover all the costs."
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know why I said that. But you've got people knocking at your door. You've got your energy, gas people, all that sort of stuff. And people trying to sell you something. You know, I treat it like that. Now, you have a choice when they come knocking what to do. And I think we make the mistake is the thought comes, we hear the knock and we open the door. And there it is, confronting us. It might be a good thought, but chances are, a lot of the time, it's not necessarily a good thought. And you may have a bit of bitterness knocking on your door. You may have some unforgiveness. You may feel cheated. You may feel proud. You may feel unloving. But something comes knocking on your door and you've got to decide, I either shut the door, no thanks, or what we do is we open the door, instead of saying no thanks, we go, we hear them out. Let's talk, let's have a conversation. So I have a conversation with this thought. And you think, you know, I'm kind of liking this little idea here. Why don't you come inside and have a cup of tea?
Sound like it.
We have the cup of tea. And we sit there, we think, yes, okay, we'll just indulge just a little bit more. A few pickies later, it's okay. You think, yeah, I won't go too far. Before you know, listen, why don't you stay for dinner? Sure, it's too late to leave now. And then before you know, it's more than that. Now it's like, wow, it's really late. Oh, the trains aren't running anymore. How about you stay the night? And then, of course, you know, we laugh, but this is exactly what happens.
Yeah.
And you stay the night, and then you wake up in the morning and have a guess who's there? At the table, ready for breakfast. Your little bitter, unforgiving thought is still there. But it doesn't stop there.
Yeah.
After a while, it's like, you know, it's still there. Before we know it, but you've been here a few days, you might as well just stay. You've got nowhere else to go. Just stay. And then depending on the gender of your thought, if you're a male, let's make it female. After a while, it's like, you know what? I'm actually enjoying this. How about we hitch up? Let's get married. And before you know it, and this is the weirdest thing about this. This is absolutely the weirdest thing about this. Before you know it, 35 years has passed. 40 even. And maybe even 50. And that same bit of thought, that same thing that you entertain, whether someone hurt you, whatever happened, is still there. Because you married them and you said, "To death do us part." And you talk to people who have had this all their lives and they can recount things like it happened yesterday. You can. You can remember all the things that someone did to you negative. You never forget what you did to anyone else. Trust me. I can assure you of that. No one has recollection. How many times have I asked people, "Oh, listen, you said this." I have no recollection. Sorry. I'm really sorry I said that to you. That's happened to me. But we have no recollection. We know exactly the way we were treated. We know exactly what someone said to us. You wonder why 30, 20, 40 years later, we've still got these things right there. Because we flat married them. We slept with them. Woke up with them. And you know, Paul will tell you. He says, you know, "But we take captive every thought." And he says, "And we make it obedient to Christ." You know, do you do that? Do you do that? You're learning to do that. Because there's so much stuff. All of us have got it. We've got, you know, people call it baggage. Call it whatever you want. My little mine house thing is just my example. Works for me. Because I don't want bitterness staying with me. I don't want to marry bitterness. I don't want to marry regret.
Yeah.
I don't want unforgiveness living with me. And you know how it works. You wake up in the morning, middle of the night, it's there. Starts off being some sort of friend, some sort of comforter, but then it becomes totally something else. You know, what does the Bible say? Here are some little examples I wrote down. And these aren't everything, by the way, obviously. But I think we struggle with some of these things, you know. You know, if you have unforgiveness, well, you struggle with unforgiveness. Someone hurts you, and people will hurt you. It's a fact of life. You know, what do you remember? What's the verses you remember? How do you turn that and make it obedient to Christ? Matthew 18, pretty harsh one, but Jesus makes it clear. If you can't forgive, you won't be forgiven. First Peter talks about love covers over a multitude of sins. Where's that verse? Where's that to combat all the things that people may have done to you? Or you may feel upset by? Love covers over a multitude of sins. What about when you've got pride in your life? I remember our pride. God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. I do not want to be a proud person. I can be. I can struggle with it, but I don't want to be a proud person. God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. What about slander? When you're tempted to slander people. And we all want to do that at times. These things are kind of fun to do, by the way. It's funny to me how that works. You know, how sin has a fun aspect to it. Very easy to do. You know, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 4, you know, when we're persecuted, we answer kindly. What about lust, if you are struggling with lust? Men and women. Well, for the men, because that's all Paul talks about in 1 Timothy 5, you know, treat older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, with absolute purity, the Bible says. That's why we need to view how the men need to be viewing the sisters in the room. That's God's standard. That's what you replace it with. That's making obedient to Christ. What about when you're feeling faithless? Hebrews 11, great verses on faith. What about when you're, you know, feeling the pull of the world and the worldliness and the greed? And one thing I've been using lately, I did a lesson for the teens about this, because the world comes knocking on everyone's door. You know, I like that verse in Hebrews 11 where it talks about Moses, that he didn't, you know, he forgave the pleasures of sin for a short time, rather be mistreated, gave up on the treasures of Egypt than rather be mistreated than enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. This is a guy who was the prince of Egypt. He was the prince of Egypt, and it says he forgave all that. He could have had it all, But he understood even back then, I'd rather be mistreated. Do you think about that? When you're sucked into this wealth and that I need money. The greed. You know, things not working out. It didn't go according to plan. Romans 8, God works for the good of those who love the Lord. Where's that verse? That God works for the good. What about when you think you feel like no one cares? A lot of effort, little gain. You ever felt that way? You give, you give, you give. You give your heart to someone, you give your heart to people. You share your faith and nothing seems to much come out of it.
Yep.
Even the women's day, they had a phenomenal success.
Yep.
I don't know what's happened with all that. It was great the women got to hear the word of God. How many people are going to become Christians from it? I have no idea. But imagine if 20 people do. You think, oh man, how awesome. But what if no one does? What are you going to think for the next women's day? Well, what's the point? You never felt that way? I have. All the time. No, correction, not all the time. It's easy to feel that way. A lot of effort. And you wonder what comes out of it. So how do you take that thought and make it obedient to Christ? How do you take any of these thoughts and make it obedient to Christ? You know, 1 Corinthians 15:58, one thing I remember a lot. You know, labour in the Lord is not in vain. It's not in vain. My word, Jeremiah, my word does not come back empty. It's what I use to try and make sure my thoughts become obedient to Christ, because otherwise I can go down those worldly standards. Be of the world, of the flesh that Paul talks about. You know, what do we believe? Who are we allowing? You know, what have you been living with? Who have you married? What's there? What's still there in your life? You know, we need to look at ourselves and take absolute responsibility for who we are and what's going on. It's too easy to play the blame game. You know, I've been talking about this and, you know, we're thinking of doing a series after this, maybe after 2 Corinthians. I was talking to the staff about this and maybe even a series like training yourself to be godly. But something that's occurred to me lately, and I shared the staff, I said, you know, I really want to talk about this because I think too many times I see it as an issue in the church and in our lives. That we don't take responsibility for who we are. We don't realise a lot of our issues are the way we think and what we're allowing in. That we're not taking captive thoughts and making obedience to Christ.
Yeah.
That we don't take, you know, it's the blame game. It's always someone else's fault. I got with someone even a little while ago. And I hear it all the time when people are about to walk out the door or their faith is struggling. And then they can't do it anymore. It's always an excuse, but it's always to do with somebody else or something else. One person, you know, said to me, listen, you know, you just need to know that I've been having quiet times for a year. I've read my Bible for a year, but it was said like, well, and I'm not having it because no one's helped me to have them. Or no one's asked me the question, if you like. No one's keeping check of me. You ever felt that way? You felt like you're not doing well? You felt like you walk into church and you know you're not well and you want someone to come and ask you, how are you? I felt that way. Pat on the back maybe. Can't you tell I'm not happy? Can't you tell I'm sad? It's all the thought thing. You know, I'm sorry, I didn't know you weren't having quiet times for a year. I actually didn't know that. But why are you saying that like it's my fault?
Mm.
Or somebody else's fault that you are where you are?
Yeah.
Mm. Somewhere along the line, you didn't take captive your thoughts. Somewhere along the line, you forgot what this was about.
Yeah.
You know, when I turned 50, not when I will turn 50, when I did turn 50, the government sent me a bowel cancer kit. Now, you know things are beginning to move on in life when the government sends you a bowel cancer kit. And they give you instructions. I'm not going to go too much into this, all right, because I know it's a little bit off-putting. But I do want to make a point. Anyway, so the government sends you a bowel cancer kit. And they want you to do this thing. It's not pleasant.
No.
Okay, but anyway, fair enough. I appreciate the fact. Yeah, well, I don't want to know what's going on. But, so what happens is, anyway, why am I going to go into all that? I'm not going to go into all that. But that's fine. It all came out clear. They sent me a letter back and said, yep, everything's fine, no problem. And you know, just funny, because just the other day, and I'm serious when I say this, just the other day I was thinking, why hasn't the government sent me another kit? Because apparently once you get over a certain age, they send it to you every 2 or 3 years or something, I think, whatever it is. And I think the proper trial is going to start in 2018 or something. So I'm thinking, well, what am I going to do now? I'm going to have to, you know, wait for the government, I guess. And I thought about this as I was thinking about this. I thought, what happens if in the meantime I get cancer, bowel cancer? I think my temptation will be, if only the government sent me another kit. Now, why didn't the government send me another kit? Now, the truth is I can go to the chemist and get another kit myself, by the way. I can go and buy a kit. Oh, but why would I want to do that when the government will give it to me for free? When they just happen to send it to me. Now, I think it's my responsibility. And I don't want to get into the signs of bowel cancer, but you hear it all the time. People go, I ignored the warning signs. They'll tell you that, which means there are signs, okay? I'm not going to tell you what that is. But if you've got, and here's my point with all this. If there are issues in your life, okay, I imagine if things aren't right in your life and there are signs that maybe internally you're not doing well, I would like to think you would talk to someone about it. Yeah. Go see a doctor. Yeah. You know, don't just sit there and... I want to say it. I really want to say it. I can't say it. But, okay, if you're pooing blood as an example... But if you're doing that stuff, you don't just sit there and go, oh, I hope it'll go away. You talk to someone. And you can't come to church and say, oh, if only, why didn't you check up on me?
Come on, mate.
But it's like that. We want everyone to get into the nitty gritty of, hey, we need to look after each other, yes. We need to be there for each other, yes. But at the same time, we're responsible for us. And the reason why, and this is all connected to me, because the flesh will tell you, the flesh wants to deflect, okay? The worldly stands of this world wants to deflect if everybody else's problem. But if you're not doing well spiritually, if things aren't good in your marriage, talk about it. Don't wait. I do ask people. We were with the Orcas the other night. We had dinner on Friday night. And I said, so how are you guys going? Are you happy? And we talked about their lives a bit. And then Anthony came back and said, well, how are you doing? And I said, none of your business. No, I didn't say that. I said, and we started talking. We talked about all sorts of things. I won't go into the detail of that. But it was fine. I was sitting there, yeah, let's talk a little bit. How are you guys doing? And that may not seem deep, and it wasn't deep. But, you know, I like to think if there was an issue, Anthony's not going to come back and say, well, you didn't really dig deep. People have done that. You didn't dig deep. What I'm saying is, take whatever's going on in here, the reason why you're not talking is because this is not working. You're not feeling. You're not figuring these things out in your own mind. You're allowing yourself to be deceived by the world, blaming everybody else. It's somebody else's problem. If I wasn't this, or I wasn't that. Take responsibility. Take captive those thoughts and make them. Paul understood the battle very well. You know, we're not psychic.
That's right.
I wish I was. I wish I could look at you and knew exactly what you're thinking, because I could help more, but I don't have that gift. Sorry. Paul understood the games. And it is. I hate to say, you know, Paul says, I beat my body and make it my slave. Was it really his body he had to beat? Yes, the flesh is weak sometimes. Let me tell you now, but you engage this. This is how somehow it gets engaged. When you get excited up here, this gets excited. I mean, you've got energy. When you're excited about doing something, you get energy to do it. If you're dragging your heels on something, you tend to get lazy and lethargic. That's what it is.
Yeah, come on.
And there's a world out there that needs saving. And the answer is it's not being saved because up here we're not seeing it clearly. We're not taking those faithless thoughts and making them obedient to Christ. There's a church that needs saving. We all need each other's help. Talk. If you've got problems, just be open. I don't pride myself on many things, but I like to pride myself on the fact that if I'm not doing well and I'm not happy, someone's going to know. Sometimes it's all of you. I'm not going to sit there in bitterness. I'm not going to marry bitterness. I'm not going to marry unforgiveness. I'm not going to marry these things. I'm not going to wake up every morning thinking the same negative thing.
That's right.
That's called depression. That's called anxiety. And my Bible makes it clear that we have a war to fight, and God's given us the weapons which to fight with. And He teaches us how to do it. Let's fight the way God wants us to fight. Let's deal with what's going on in here so that we can fight that battle properly. To God be the glory. Let's all stand and sing one final song.